breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Tuesday show on WTMJ from our Avenue Studios, the Annex Wealth Management Annex Studios here, just outside the 3rd Street Market Hall on Wisconsin Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Thanks for the listen. However you find us over the air, online podcast. You guys are blowing up our podcast page. Thanks to each and every one of you who have taken the time to find this show. And I used to say this in my lead. You don't have to check your brain at the door. You can disagree with the host. Perfectly fine. I often read texts that are critical of me. That's the difference. That's why we do this. Now, we have a big day in this country today. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on it, but I think it's worth noting. Eric and I did some of this morning. We talked to some experts and some former DOJ official, spokesperson, that kind of set the stage. Historic hearing, arraignments in Miami, Miami courthouse, a setting for the first ever case of a criminal indictment against a sitting, I shouldn't say sitting, former president, Donald Trump. I made it my show poll today, and I made it real simple because I think this gives me a good sense of where people are at on this subject. And just to give you an overview, not a Trump supporter, I voted Republican almost every election in my lifetime, but I'm not a fan of Donald Trump, and that's not breaking news for anybody. I don't think he's good for the country. I did support some of the things he did. I love the 2017 tax cut. I like some of his Supreme Court justices. But beyond that, I struggle to understand our fascination, fixation, cult-like obsession with the person that is Donald Trump. But that's a topic for another day. So here's the question. Show poll up on Twitter at 620WTMJ or at WTMJ Steve. You can also, if you're not on the Twits, weigh in on the old National Bank talking text line 855-616-1620. Former President Donald Trump is in Miami for a historic arraignment related to his mishandling, alleged, of classified documents. What is your one-word reaction to these charges? One word. Not a phrase, not a sentence, not a paragraph, not a thesis. One word. Gave you a few choices. Finally, 64% right now with almost 150 votes. Well done, because I just started talking about it. Infuriating, 8.6%. Disinterested, 25% of respondents say they are not interested in at all. And that doesn't surprise me either. Oversaturation, Trump derangement syndrome, which also can be overstated. Just people getting away from news. I'll tease it now and I'll talk about it later. Fox News, their ratings, their domination of the top 20 in broadcasts and cable nets is going away quickly. And I think there's a reason for that, and some of that might be related to this story and how they have now decided to go after the president. So a couple quick things on this. I spent a lot of time last night. One, it was a night where I didn't have a lot to do, but I watched a lot of the network coverage from MSNBC, Fox, CNN, a few others, spinning the dial, as it were, on YouTube TV, to see where they were going with this story. Obviously, historic is an understatement. Surprising? No. From MSNBC, the Rachel Maddow Show, who put this in terms of Spiro Agnew in the context of it's happened before, there's some truth to that. Some is a stretch, which doesn't surprise me. To Fox, for the first time, going after the president in ways that we've never really seen on Fox, and that's part and parcel, one of the reasons why I think their ratings are declining, because that's been a safe place for Trump supporters and Trump's fans and Donald Trump. And then CNN, who had a candidate for the Republican nomination for president, Chris Christie, former governor of New Jersey, on for at least an hour. It might have been a little bit more than that. I didn't watch the whole thing. I watched some of it. Who basically... And I give him credit because he's an island in a vast lake where not a lot of people are saying what he's saying. Here's a little bit of former Governor Chris Christie, now candidate for president, Republican side, on the former president.
His employees were scared. They always call him his boxes. His boxes. He wants his boxes near him. He flew the boxes up to New Jersey for summer vacation. What is this, like they're a family member? I mean, seriously, I got to have my boxes with me. And let me ask you a question. What exactly was he doing with them? Did someone remind him he's not the president anymore? You don't need these things anymore. This is vanity run amok, Anderson. Run amok. Ego run amok. And he is now going to put this country through this when we didn't have to go through it. Everyone's blaming the prosecutors. He did it. It's his conduct.
Chris Christie, former governor of New Jersey, on the mishandling of classified documents by the former president. A couple baseline things for me. There are some comparisons you can make to the conduct of Vice President Mike Pence, former vice president. Certainly the current president, Joe Biden, they also had documents. The difference, the big difference, is what they did with them. From all accounts, and this is two sides of the political aisle, Mike Pence being a Republican, of course, and Joe Biden being a Democrat, they cooperated with authorities. The reason Donald Trump is in the situation he is in today is because he didn't cooperate. He moved documents. He played games with federal agencies and authorities. That's why he's here. Last thing before we go to break, and I'm welcoming your comments as well, 855-616-1620. I listened to one of the networks last night, and they were playing commentary from Republican senators coming back into Washington, D.C. after the weekend. And they asked them about this case. And there's a significant difference between Republican senators Republican senators and members of the House who are Republican. Vast difference. Trump has much more support in the House, including Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy. Almost to a person, Republican senators said, this is serious. This is not a game. People like Jonathan Turley, law experts, who have been very supportive of the former president, are saying, this is serious. This is different. So be careful with the whataboutisms. Be careful with the comparisons. Because how you handle these documents, your intent to deceive or to hide, is much different than discovering you have documents like Mike Pence, like Joe Biden, and saying, here's what I got. Come and get them. Much different. 855-616-1620. You can call it a lot of things. I would call it a disappointing turn in American politics. Deception, certainly hyperbole, reality TV aspects of this as well. And I think all eyes, because we're not going to have any eyes in the courtroom, other than the, for lack of a better term, stenographer, court reporter, giving us a transcript, no audio, no video. So we're not going to see or hear that live. I would have argued that probably would have been a good thing given the uniqueness of this situation. We're going to learn a lot when the president, former, speaks after the hearing. And I'm not sure where that's happening. It could be Mar-a-Lago, it could be somewhere else. What he says about this, I have no illusion that he's going to feel any remorse for what he did. I think he will insist that just like the election conspiracy stuff that he's been touting for years, this is also a witch hunt, and I think he'll be consistent with that. The only thing that would be interesting about this arraignment today is if the judge, in her wisdom, and I'm saying this seriously, not facetiously, would say to the defendant, you cannot talk about this case outside of this courtroom. That would be refreshing. It would be good for America. And it would certainly be an eye-opener on whether or not the former president would listen. Your turn to talk after this on WTMJ. It's always interesting whenever you talk about Donald Trump, former president, President 45. The difference of opinion that we all have. So, for example, on the twit today, as I posed that show poll question, Mike says, he should have been arrested a long time ago on espionage. You showed people top secret documents, probably the Saudis, the war plans on Iran. Maybe have sold those secrets. And those are charges that Mike is making that right now are not backed up in fact. So be careful with that. Republicans disgust me still supporting Trump under these circumstances. On that point, I will agree. I'm not sure where or why that's still happening, but it does, and it's strong. Go Blue says, ridiculous. I feel there's far more criminal activity in the Biden family. That's essentially the argument that I get when we talk about this. Now, I have a lot of response on the old National Bank text line, not surprising. Some of the people chose to use the one word, finally, deserving, deserved, finally, accountable, finally, amazing, finally, ridiculous. So it's all over the place. And then this last one I just got from the 414, Trump 2024. Don't be fooled. There are plenty of people that would and will vote for Donald Trump if he is the candidate for president for Republicans in 2024. And that number, I would estimate between 30 and 35% of the country, and obviously much higher among Republicans. A lot can happen between now and then. Bob joins us from Waukesha. Welcome to the show, Bob. Happy Tuesday. Bob.
Good morning, hey. Steve. How are you?
I'm good. What do you think?
Well, let me ask you, and I have heard nothing in regards to this, but this problem seems to be pervasive. Is the government taking any steps to preclude this from occurring in the future, these documents just moving out of the White House with the presidents and vice presidents and whomever?
Yeah, it's a fascinating question, but I'm going to hang up. You can hang up and listen to the answer. Here's the problem. There's protocols. National Archives has a protocol. The White House has a protocol where they are stored and supposedly secured from that transition period from the previous president to the new president. There are determinations made. This goes to the archives. This goes to if the president is that far along, their presidential library or their new office, wherever that would be. In the case of Trump, it's Mar-a-Lago. The problem is, if a former president, and this may be the first time, maybe it's happened before, we don't know about it, where this president took an extremely large number of documents to his residence/office in Mar-a-Lago, moved them around, when asked about them, lied about them. These are all in the charges that will be announced today, or actually said out loud in court today. Deceived people, showed them to people that shouldn't have access. Some of these documents had the classification Five Eyes Only. Well, the person that was looking at these documents weren't one of those five people that had the rights to see those documents. And we've all seen the pictures now, at least most of us, stored on stages at Mar-a-Lago, small stages for weddings, it looked like, in a hall, bathrooms, showers. There was no security on these documents, which had sensitive information. Here's the dirty little secret, or actually the worrisome piece of this. If any of these documents were exposed to other countries, foreign agents, because there's also some reporting that there were people that shouldn't have been in Mar-a-Lago and that estate that got in. Now, whether they had access to documents, that has to be determined in a court of law. If they took that information and it put American lives at risk around this globe because of the sensitivity of that material, we're having a much bigger conversation here and a much more serious conversation. So there's protocols in place, but if a former president or his security detail doesn't follow those, that suggests we're going to have to tighten up procedures. And I think what's going to happen next, post-Trump, hopefully before that, is that these documents cannot leave the White House property, which is heavily secured, until they are either determined where they go or declassified. Then they can obviously be moved around at the discretion of the former president. That has to happen. A few more here before we go to break. Those people that would vote for Trump should be neutered. I mean, come on. Let's be smarter than that. Honestly, why would you even want all these documents? What are you going to do with them? It did have the texture says hashtag hoarder. It did have that feel to it. He basically took everything and apparently was going through these documents at his leisure and I guess deciding what was worth it and what wasn't. 414, amazes me, felons can't vote but yet can be president. Yeah, from all accounts, that is true. Disappointing is another one-word answer to my show poll question. Trump, prison 2023. I can tell you that's not going to happen. There are serious questions about whether or not this case will even be adjudicated before the next presidential election. And if he's got good lawyers, and that's still an open question because he's having trouble getting lawyers, and he just lost two in the last week. He's got good lawyers. They can drag this out. The Trump problem, if you call it that, and as a Republican, I do call it that, because he will not win a general election if he's the nominee. It will be a sideshow of epic proportions. It'll be embarrassment for this country. I'm not discounting people that like Trump. I know tons of them. Friends, family, neighbors, whatever. People can vote who they want to vote for. But at the end of all this process, do we have a stronger nation that agrees more than they disagree? I think that's still a noble goal. And we'll get to a story after the news at the bottom here. A local story, Milwaukee, where some Milwaukee Common Council members just can't get out of their own way. Quick break. Thanks for tuning in on this Tuesday. Always enjoy the conversation, so keep those texts and calls coming. 855-616-1620, the Old National Bank Talk and Text Line. If you have a longer form question, feedback, comment, whatever, steve.scafidi2f1d at wtmj.com. I love reading the emails, and I try as often as I can to respond to all of them. So it may take a while, especially if I get a lot of, you know, there's days where I get 100 emails. So be patient, but I always try to sort them. It's a good weekend. Especially if it's a rainy day on a weekend like Sunday, I got to a lot of stuff that I had kind of been avoiding. It was a sort of a rainy day can-do list or will-do list, and it was very productive. All right, so if you were listening to the show yesterday, we had Robin Voss, Speaker of the Wisconsin Assembly, on the show talking about this mega deal, sweeping, to use borrow a term from a local reporter, state shared revenue deal announced last week, which on its face should help Milwaukee dig out from a tremendous challenge with its pension crisis through a new sales tax. They actually made it easier for them. Get 2/3 of the common council. You don't even need a referendum, which, trust me, a lot of taxpayers are not happy about that unique detail. So what happened is at least 7 members of the Milwaukee Common Council. Now this needs a 2/3 vote, by the way, to move this forward. And obviously the state has to do what the state has to do. The governor has to sign it, all of that. But this was a bipartisan agreement. The governor has indicated he's on board. The governor will join me at 9:35 on this show, this program tomorrow. Governor Tony Evers. As I said, I had Speaker Robin Voss. I had Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson on the show Friday. I have reached out to State Senator Devin Lemahieu, Majority Leader, Wisconsin State Senate, for his thoughts. So we've had the cast of characters, the players, and as I said yesterday, any Milwaukee Common Council member who wants to come on the show and talk about their decision to go yay or nay on this is more than welcome. 855-616-1620, the Old National Bank talk and text line. A couple baseline things about this. It would provide, this new sales tax would provide up to $194 million of extra money, allowing the city to dig out from this hole. It also helped out other municipalities across the state, 20% for almost every municipality, which is a good thing. I have local leaders on the show all the time. They tell me this needs to happen. Well, it could happen. Now, there are qualifiers for Milwaukee. It's going to bring into Milwaukee public school system not 150, not 100, not 50, but I think 25 or 26 school resource officers. Would also say that money raised from this tax increase could not be spent on an expansion of the Milwaukee streetcar, which is a good decision, by the way. Legislators, the governor, worked hard to find a bipartisan solution to this Milwaukee problem. And let's be clear, 2 things happened. One, the amount of money that we send from Milwaukee or Milwaukee County to the state and what we get back has decreased. That is a problem that should be fixed. And to a degree, it's being fixed sort of with this deal. The other one that I think we gloss over, Alder people, is that Milwaukee caused its own pension problem. Decisions made were horrible decisions. And one of the things that needs to happen is they got to get out of the business of having their own system. It needs to go to the state Wisconsin retirement system, which is well-run, well-capitalized, and is one of the best systems in the country. Not the state, in the country. Which brings me to the reaction of some of the members of the Milwaukee Common Council. And I understand, trust me, why some people don't like this. Because you have a state legislature, and to some degree a Democratic governor, telling you what you have to do. Trust me, that happens every day. Not just in Milwaukee, but everywhere. Is there this notion that Milwaukee is somehow unique when it comes to legislation or laws? It's not. If this doesn't happen, this is me saying this, it will be a financial disaster for the city. And if I'm an Alder person who votes against this deal, it's part of that two-thirds problem that Mayor Cavalier Johnson has, and I'm a constituent, I'm going to hold it against you when the city goes bankrupt. You will not serve on that common council. All your grandiose ideas about workers' rights and all the other things that you've wrapped into your title as Alder person aren't going to really matter too much when you're sitting at home with no job and certainly not representing the constituents in the area that you live. Comments like this, Milwaukee Alder Bob Bauman: I think we're basically sunk. Who plans to vote against the increase said about the plan? Clueless. You're choosing bankruptcy if you vote no and this doesn't get two-thirds. You're choosing the bankruptcy of the largest city in the states with a bipartisan deal that the governor, who is a Democrat, and legislature that have vast majorities of Republicans and didn't have to do this, by the way, but for the work of local leaders, business people, are doing it anyway. You're choosing bankruptcy. I would fire you just for that reason. Milwaukee Alderperson Marina Dmitrievich said she also doesn't approve of many of those policy mandates from the state, but said she plans to vote yes for the sales tax increase if it comes to the council. I'm anxiously waiting for what I see as a generational opportunity that provides resources that we not only need, but deserve for the city of Milwaukee. That's the right answer. And I disagree with Alderman Dmitrievich on a lot of things. Here's the statement that got me, though. And I know I'm running long here, but I want to get this all in, then I'll listen to you. Seven Alders: Mullaly Coggs, Mark Chambers, Russell Stamper, Laressa Taylor, Andrea Pratt, Khalif Rainey, and Lamont Westmoreland said this. And I want to get the right quote. We remain committed to addressing inequities, public safety challenges, and our financial condition with transparency through research and a level of empathy that the authors of this legislation did not have. They called it, and I'm paraphrasing, a racist deal. 855-616-1620, the old National Bank talk and text line. Alder people, men and women, have tough decisions to make every day. Cities large and small. This one is as close to a no-brainer as it ever will be. You don't get this kind of cooperation in Madison. You don't get this generational opportunity, as Alder Marina Dmitrievich said in her release. More than once in a generation and maybe never again. So if your answer is you're pissed off about it because it doesn't do what your wish list is, or you're mad that Milwaukee police, at least 26 of them, under the designation of school resource officer, are going to be in schools again, finally, my only suggestion is to you, get a different job or grow the hell up. Because it's not going to get any better than this. That last piece that I mentioned about the SROs is a real sticking point with some people. And if you remember the reaction post-George Floyd, to his outright hatred for members of the law enforcement community, public safety professionals. I'm not excusing the behavior of those outliers that commit crimes, sometimes deadly, against members of our community. Never acceptable, and last time I checked, they faced a judge, a jury, serious charges, and many of them are now in jail, if you're looking at the George Floyd case. But here's why this matters, and this is why the return of at least, 25, 26 SROs to Milwaukee Public Schools is a good thing, regardless of what some Milwaukee alders think it is or might be. So if you remember, post-George Floyd, many communities across this country looked at SROs as a target or a way of appeasing the anger of the community. One of those cities was Denver. Right after George Floyd, SROs were removed in 2020, unanimous vote by the school board. The decision at the time in Denver was that the close proximity, this is the incredibleness in a not a good way of the argument. Close proximity of law enforcement to students on school campuses contributes to a school-to-prison pipeline. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. Behavior, conduct, criminal activity contributes to a school-to-prison pipeline. And the quicker we get that in our collective heads, the better off we will be. Fast forward, May of this year, Denver Police Chief advocating for school resource officers to return. School district advocating for that. The mayor of Denver advocating for that. Because, of course, what happens is chaos ensues. Discipline problems increase. The removal of SROs was a feel-good fix for those of us in the community who see police as the enemy, i.e. criminals. They're not the enemy. There are systems in place to go after the offenders in public safety who go too far, who commit crimes. And the last time I checked, when there have been instances of this, almost to each case, there have been consequences for that behavior. Doesn't stop the protests. Doesn't stop the violence in reaction to whatever the police officer did. Burned cities, lost lives. Generations of improvement in school districts thrown away for a feel-good measure. That's the problem. Let's be smarter. I'm going to weave this all together after the break. Let's be smarter here. Fixing a financial problem can actually allow you as a council, as a local leader, as a mayor, as a legislator, as a governor, to fix the bigger things, to fix all of the things that are really your job. And unfortunately, have been thrown to the wayside in this flurry of press releases, press conferences, in the era of blowhardism, which passes for local leadership nowadays. Especially in big cities. You have a once-in-a-lifetime potential deal to help the city of Milwaukee get back on its feet because some alders previously or some county board members previously made some pretty bad decisions. You've got a chance to fix this. Do the right thing. I'm hearing we might have some live Dave Spano in studio. Wow. Dave Spano, if you're listening, looking forward to that. So I guess my takeaway on all of this is, all of this is related. I understand, and there's some factions in the Milwaukee Common Council, probably the Milwaukee County Board as well, where you are doing the exact same thing that you accuse Republican legislators of doing. You want everything. If it's not perfect, you won't vote for it. This is a bipartisan deal. To use the terms of at least one alder person, generational. I'll ask the governor that question tomorrow at 9:35 on this program. I asked Robin Voss that question. I asked Mayor Cavalier Johnson. And if it's, let's focus on the race issue because that seems to be where we're going here. Last time I checked, the mayor of Milwaukee is African-American. Cavalier Chevy Johnson supports this proposed deal. Has lived a life. Getting great reviews from even Republicans. Our own Bill McCoshin, who joins me on Fridays at 9 with Joe Zepecki, praised his efforts on Friday. I'm not asking everyone to think the same thing. I'm not asking everyone. But when you have an opportunity to seize bipartisanship in an era where, I don't know if you've been paying attention to the news, not real popular. That C word, compromise, is not real popular nowadays. And maybe, I said this to elected who wasn't on the show, away from the show, maybe this signals something. Maybe there is a thawing, a real thawing, not the fake thawing we talked about a couple years ago between the governor, legislature, and the state, but an actual thawing, not just here, but other places, where common sense and logic prevails, where people don't make up blind, dumb excuses for really bad conduct because it matches their political profile, or they'll feel bad admitting maybe they were wrong about somebody, maybe a former president. Or somebody else. Maybe you were wrong about him. Maybe he's not the be-all and end-all. Maybe he's not the savior. Maybe he's not this messiah of politics. The great thing about this country is we can make change. Change that's real. And I will always believe that a deal, a bill, law that is obtained through a bipartisan process, and especially so in a divided government that is mutually agreed upon by a majority, two-thirds or whatever, is going to give us the best possible chance for success. I'm not a one-size-fits-all. I'm not a one-party-has-all-the-answers person. Plenty of folks think that. I think they're wrong. I think they're wrong. All right, lots to get to after the 10 o'clock hour news. We got a lot of guests. Just to give you the lineup here. Dave Spano, Summerfest President Sarah Pancari, in studio with Chef Michael Fecker, always a popular draw. And, of course, author and columnist Christian Snyder will join us to talk about the Trump news. That's all coming up after the news, which is next right here on the one, the only, the biggest stick in the state, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios here on Wisconsin Avenue, WTMJ.
Breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
Good morning. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Thanks for listening to the program. Covered a lot of ground in that first hour. It had to be said. And if you're new to the show, I don't read talking points. Could care less what a party says. I lean right. It's the way I vote. I don't apologize for it. I don't think Republicans are evil. I think, like Democrats, they make some dumb decisions sometimes and they act like idiots. But that's not unique to one party or another or even independents. Nobody's perfect. I was talking a lot in the end of the first hour of the show. And thanks for listening, everybody. And you can listen or comment at our Old National Bank Talk and text line anytime, 855-616-1620, the Old National Bank Talk and text line, your resource for not just this show, but every show on WTMJ, including the weekends. If you really want to get fine-tuned or in the dirt, in detail, feedback, comments, whatever, steve.scafidi, 2Fs, 1D at WTMJ.com. All right, enough of that stuff. So I was talking about the city of Milwaukee. Decision, hard decisions that have to be made. I would argue, and I did argue, that the proposed deal agreed upon by the governor, state legislator, legislature, Milwaukee mayor, Milwaukee County exec, business leaders, is a good deal for the city. Now, somebody made an interesting point. Is this the first time you ever supported a tax increase? Might be. But it's generational. And I prefer a situation where Milwaukee county or city doesn't go bankrupt. Because that's a whole lot of problems that I don't want to have to deal with as a resident of Milwaukee County and as a taxpayer here. But I want to point to a different city as an example of how quickly you can lose your mojo. Now, I still think Milwaukee's a great city. We're going to be talking to Sarah Pancari in about 30 minutes, a little bit less, about the great event that is Summerfest. 3 weekends now. And some of the cool things and cool ways you can get down there. But that's a celebration of the city. And there's a lot of those. So I was reading this story in the Wall Street Journal yesterday about San Francisco, a city I used to live in, worked in the 80s. Loved it. Way too expensive at that time. And it's insane now. One of the reasons I left, couldn't afford it. And it has to do with how you can destroy a city, especially when you're talking about tourism, pretty quickly with some bad decision making. War on police, letting homelessness dictate what your streets look like and feel like and the risks associated with allowing that behavior. Drugs, open selling of drugs in a city. When I was in San Francisco to speak a couple of years ago, driving along the freeway and seeing tent cities popping up not only in parks, which is very common, but on freeway exits and entry points, right on the freeway, essentially. Camps, tents, homeless people. And it's starting to show up in San Francisco, and that's why this message is important, this idea that we need to make sure that the city of Milwaukee is financially sound, and one of the ways you do that is to make good decisions. San Francisco, city of San Francisco, is not making good decisions when it comes to this. Now, there may be a slight turnaround. There's some awareness that they have a problem. Their homeowners, their taxpayers, their constituents are telling them this can't continue. A number of hotel operators, city of San Francisco, saying we can't do this. Tourism is down. They're selling their properties, defaulting on their loans. The parks system turning into homeless camps versus green space that everybody can enjoy. And just by the way, walking through a park with a kid, seeing needles, drug activity, tents, that's not the best look for a city. We are not to that extent, but decisions we make have real life impacts on where a city goes. That's why I weave these two together. San Francisco is a great city, but you can blow that up pretty quickly. Milwaukee is a great city. You can also blow that up pretty quickly. And this desire by a few people, a few local leaders to do the same thing you accuse Republicans of my way or the highway, is not sustainable. It's not smart and will result in epic failure and a disaster for a city that could be vibrant, could be a game changer, could be part of the story of a state that said, you know what? We are going to be unique. We are going to take chances. We are going to encourage people to stay here, move here for smart leadership. I like the data center decision, Mount Pleasant. Microsoft, $50 million property deal in an area around the Foxconn property. That's good, smart business. That's thinking for the future. I've argued for years we should have a strong push toward making this a technology hub. Available space, cheaper than most places, with great connection points, air, freeways, interstate system. Local roads, generally. Rail. Even shipping. Midwest is where it's at. And, oh, by the way, plenty of fresh water. Which other areas of the country, fast-growing areas that, frankly, can't think beyond a week or a month or a year. Keep encouraging people to move there because of the warm weather. Come on. Unsustainable. We have what it takes. Are we willing to do what it takes to make this a success? I think we do. That starts with a vote, a simple vote in the Milwaukee County Council and the Milwaukee County Board. That's where it starts. Quick break. Next hour and a half of the program plus is going to be a lot of guests, so hold on to your your hats and your seats. Dave Spano, President and CEO of the one, the only Annex Wealth Management in the, oh, by the way, the Annex Wealth Management studio.
And I love it.
Isn't that nice?
Look at that beautiful sign. Thank you very much.
I wanted a gold lame or leaf sign, but they said that's too much money.
There should have been a party.
It is impressive,
awesome.
Though.
Yeah, thank you.
There's a lot of
being a sponsor and being connected.
You're a great partner. So I don't know where to start. We've often talked over the last probably year about recession, inflation, consumer price index, the Fed's activity, raising those rates. Where are we at right now?
Well, we're going to find out a lot tomorrow. There was a CPI report that came out this morning that shows that inflation is beginning to moderate. We expected that would happen after the rate of increases from the Federal Reserve. So we're not surprised at that. You'll remember, Steve, that about a year ago, we were above 9%. So the fact that we came in with a 4% number is better. We're going to hear a lot from the Fed tomorrow. We highly expect that they are going to pause. Remember, they have three choices. They can continue to raise rates, they can pause, or they can pivot. What do those terms mean? Obviously, they could raise another 25 basis points. They could stop and wait to see what is in front of them. Or they can pivot and start to change rates and start to lower them. We just think they're going to pause and take a look at the data.
That guess is going to determine a lot of courses of action among the financial community, folks that do what you do at Annex Wealth Management. So the pause, good news for financial planners and people saving and investing?
Yeah, I think if they would continue to raise rates, and this is my opinion, that they would harm the economy. I think they've raised rates enough right now, and it's above the terminal rate, that they can say, let's take a look at the data, let's see what the facts and circumstances are and see if we can assess. But it's a tough job because at the very same time, we have fiscal spending, we have energy, we saw OPEC that said they're going to cut, so that'll raise oil prices as we go into driving season. So it's a complex issue, and it's certainly above the Fed's target of 2%. Still, it's heading in the right direction, but don't tell someone who's trying to put milk and eggs on in their house that in prices aren't up. I mean, it's everywhere. I mean, everywhere you go. We just read an article this morning in the Wall Street Journal. The guy's got to take his kids all over the place, and it may sound like one of those problems that that not everyone is concerned about. But everywhere you go to transfer your kids to go into school programs, it costs more money.
Dave Spano joining us in studio here at WTMJ. You and I have talked also about the role of politics. We just had the debt ceiling deal done. Kind of a 2-year reprieve on that subject. Still, the appropriations part of the budget process still to be negotiated, still to be determined. Are you in a good place when it comes to the politics of the economy? I know we got a lot going on in Miami today.
For sure.
Is that a worrisome?
Well, there's no doubt in I sighed there because there's no doubt that there is an intersection of what happens in the political world and that what happens in the economic world. So we have to watch it. There's so many things that politically we have to watch. But we said that it was going to likely be a nothing burger, if you will, with the debt ceiling, that it's going to be bipartisan support of it because they had to. But there's no question right now that they just kicked that can down the road past the 2024 election. So that election will have significant impact on what the financial world looks like after that election.
Micro detail. We have an arraignment hearing happening in Miami. Does something like that involves a leading, let's be honest, leading candidate Republican nomination for president, can that have an impact on some of this?
What moves markets is new news, right? And so maybe surprising the market. This is not new news. We all know that this is happening, that it's out there. It really is a matter of, it's not a good look. No matter how, if you're a hardcore Democrat, I mean, indicting and arresting a former United States president is not a good look. So that certainly causes concern around the world. And we have to look at what happens with the U.S. dollar because it's the world's reserve. And all of this action, I think, weakens our place in the world and weakens the U.S. dollar.
I know you spend a lot of time talking to CEOs, business leaders, community leaders and the like. What are they telling you about this?
About what's happening with Trump?
Yeah.
I will tell you that a lot of people were headed up to here, radio terms, folks. I'm putting my hands up over my eyes that they didn't want to see Trump and Biden. No one wanted to see that election come forth, but we'll see. It's a long ways away. We'll see what happens. We'll see if this derails him or makes him stronger. And it's still a long ways away. And that's the same case on the Democratic side. I know everyone is saying that Biden is going to be the presumptive nominee, but we'll have to see. But when you think about where economics and politics collide, it's going to happen coming up right now, Steve, with the Supreme Court. they're taking on the student debt, and is it legal to allow that to happen? So all of this is coming together at the same time. I will tell you, in a bigger picture from 30,000 feet, it really matters. Whatever company that you're looking at, Tesla or Coca-Cola, or pick a company, did they sell more stuff? And if they sold more stuff, that's increasing sales. Did they manage their expenses, and what's their net income? If they have a rising net income, we can put a multiple on in an evaluation.
What's Annex's position, investing strategy? What are you communicating to your clients on this pause idea, the tenuous nature of the inflation recession question, politics? That can go in a lot of different directions. What are you talking about right now?
So what we do, obviously, we go through every single family's situation. So it's not just a ballpark analysis. It is everyone goes through this process, and you can go anywhere from think about it as a speedometer, from a conservative, which is say 10 miles an hour, to highly aggressive, which might be 70 miles an hour. And we put you in there, and we together we figure out where you should go. But in that side of the portfolio, interest rates determine assets, not only stocks but bonds as well. And so when the interest rates are moving, you have to move with it, and you can't just sit there and set it and forget it. So right now we think on the fixed income side that both duration and credit need to be looked at. Duration is how long the bonds go. The shorter, obviously, the longer the bond goes, the more fluctuation. The shorter, the less fluctuation. And then credit. Credit means if you're going to have a lower credit, that's going to move more in this environment, especially if we're headed to the most anticipated recession of all time, which, as you know, I've argued for 6 months, may not happen.
And I'm with you on that one. Whenever you're on, I get this question or a variation of this question. When will my retirement account start making money more times than not? And that's everybody's wish, right? It's easy to invest and to be optimistic about your dollars that you worked hard for, saved, right, when things are just moving up. It's the difficult times that test us.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And I think it's a great question, but your listeners may think that this is a surprise. We've entered a new bull market, and that really means from 20% to the bottom that we had in October to what we just went through, the market has gone up 20%. So that means that bear market that we were in is now in the past.
Does that surprise you?
It does. It does, because there were so many people who were so negative, and of course what the Federal Reserve was doing was intentionally slowing down the economy. So now we get into a situation where we've entered a bull market, and there's so many investors that have moved, not maybe not people that we manage there, but people that do it themselves, have moved cash, have moved to the outside. And with that, they now have to do what's called FOMO, fear of missing out. And so they may try to catch up, they may add to the market, and you can see this big run. This major run has come from the top 10 tech stocks. They derive about 90% of the gain.
Now, always a bad idea. Bad idea to chase those things.
It is.
A plan ahead of time.
There's no question. If you do that, when you try to time the market, you have to be right twice. When to get out and when to get back in. And you've heard me say this to you, Steve, but this is a perfect example of that. People tried to time it, and here they are sitting now. The market's up 20%, and they might be sitting on the sidelines going, how do I get back in?
That's where that fear comes from. That's exactly why Annex Wealth Management is the place to go. Dave Spahn, always great to talk to you. I could talk to you for an hour about this.
Yeah,
stuff.
thanks for having me. I was in the building.
Yeah.
Your neighbor is MMAC, and of course they've done a lot of work. I know you've talked to them about trying to get this bill through. They really want to see this funding bill go through for the city and for the county. But for this happening, they are in dire straits. And so not everyone's going to like all of the bill, but there's more good in the bill than there is bad. And the parts that the folks don't like, there might be a way to work together on it.
As a business owner, business leader, everybody's not always going to be happy.
No. And as a politician, a former politician, that you have to bring something to the table. Sometimes, as Tim Sheehy said, there's a spoonful of sugar to make the medicine go down. There's some things of that bill that they may not like, but we need to get that passed. It's right. It's the right thing for the city and for the county.
Quick, your gut feeling it will pass in Milwaukee County Council and Milwaukee County Board?
I don't know. I certainly hope so, because the alternative is a dire situation.
I just spent an hour talking about that. Dave Spahn, always great to see you. President and CEO of Annex Wealth Management. Go to annexwealth.com. Great resource for anyone that has assets they want to invest wisely for your future, and host a Money Talk, which I try to catch every Saturday morning.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Dave Spahn, a quick break here on WTM. Unless you live in a cave or you don't know anything about Wisconsin, which is a serious failure, in my opinion, epic fail. The 55th version of Milwaukee's great summer festival, greatest music festival on the planet, begins on June 22nd, three consecutive weekends. And joining us on the phone is the president of Summerfest, Sarah Pancari. Hi, Sarah.
Hey, Steve. How you doing?
I am good. We haven't talked for a while, so I got to think that you are excited as heck about the upcoming 55th version of Summerfest.
Well, you know, I heard Kickstart My Heart, and it's like it's such an apropos way to like talk about how where we're at right now, because all of us around here are just so excited. I mean, just next week, it's hard to believe it's coming this quickly, but we're here. And I couldn't be more excited to celebrate 55.
So one of the things that I wanted to focus on today, because we'll probably have you on more than once over the next, you know, weeks ahead here, is transportation. And it's always a concern for people how to get to Summerfest the easiest way, in some cases the cheapest way. So what's different this year? What's been added that gets people on the grounds of the what I say is the greatest music festival on the planet?
And you can just keep saying that, please, every day, all day. That's great with
you
me.
You got it.
But yeah. No, and really, you know, yesterday we launched, and it's available on summerfest.com on the Getting Here page. But this year, we wanted to be really intentional about providing all the different ways that patrons can access the festival park. Because, you know, and we talk about here, don't rely on your muscle memory, right? Those of us that have come down to the lakefront for events for many, many years say, okay, this is how I like to go. But Milwaukee is changing and growing, and there's cranes in the sky, and things might be a little bit different. So what we want everyone to do is plan your time, plan your visit, plan your route. And so if you freeway flyers are back. We're so excited.
Nice.
MCTS.
Nice.
Really, really grateful to MCTS for coming back with those freeway flyers, one from college to the south, one from Brown Deer to the north, and, of course, the new BRT Connect line is from Watertown Plank. And the BRT is free. The other routes are $10 per person per trip. So,
yeah, don't bury that headline. The BRT, brand new routes, and it's free.
It is. It's free. And you can pick it up all the way down Wisconsin Avenue. So it's a great option to come down to Summerfest. Of course, the bar shuttles, which a lot of people use, and we love the partnership with those establishments. And, you know, our goal is to anything coming from the north drops you off near the north gate, coming from the south drops you off near the south gate. And, of course, you have a hop, you have bicycles. Ride share is a great option. We're really doing our best to make sure that we're providing those designated drop-off areas so that, you know, patrons know where they're going. But really importantly, a lot of people choose to drive down to the festival park, which is great. But we're encouraging everyone to think about exiting before you get to the lakefront exit. Exit at James Lovell, exit at Plankinton, go north, park downtown. There's ample space to park in one of the many lots, and then take a walk to the north gate. When you get to those lots, there'll be a QR code on signage that'll give you the safest walking route. So, again, you know, Milwaukee's changing. It's really an exciting time to be part of the downtown community, but we want to keep people parking downtown so that you can have a safe walk into the park.
So it sounds like we can all get there. Once we're there, will we notice any obvious changes on the grounds? What's changed since last year?
You know, it's exciting. We've got, of course, the 55th, so that's a big celebration in itself, but we have a new Soundwave stage. So we're doing a dance stage, taking a page from some of our festival partners, and have a dance pavilion at the Midgate, as well as we have our new Johnsonville Somerville stage, which is really fun on the north end. And then, of course, just all the fabulous new food, all the music, all the family fun that's gonna take place just next week.
You know, my wife and I, Kathy and I, were talking about, I think we went three times last year, and we go during the like early to late afternoon, sometimes stay into the evening a little bit. We're not those who closed Summerfest, although we did see the, I think it was the Cheap Trick and Rod Stewart show. Was that last year? I think it was.
It was last
so,
year,
so
yeah.
We were there relatively late. For someone who's been around this great festival, greatest on the planet, what's the average? Do you know the average number of times people go to Summerfest? Is there a number? Like three is like about right for us.
Yeah.
Oh, did we just lose Sarah?
Well, but
there we go.
Am I on?
Yes, you're good. You're good. We almost lost you.
You know, oh, good. Well, don't lose me. We have a long way to go here. We have 3 weekends. We got to get through here. you know, the beauty of the festival, I mean, there's 14 ways to get into this event free. And we know that our community loves to come and support not only the festival, but also the other nonprofits. So really, we do our best to make it as accessible as possible through keeping prices low at the gate. So three, a lot of people tell me, you know, I come once a weekend. Really depends on lineups and who you want to see and how, you know, what friends you have in town or who's coming in. You know, we really find that there's so many different reasons why people come to the event because it does have so much to offer. So three is a popular number, I will say, but you're welcome to come all nine. We have a lot of fans who come all 9 days. It makes it, everyone has their Summerfest story, which is something we really relish and celebrate, in particular in a anniversary year like 55.
Yeah, we're talking to Milwaukee's Summerfest president, Sarah Pancari. I think I asked you this last year too. Is there a concert or an artist that you are looking forward to seeing in person this year?
Well,
and I know you see a lot of them.
Yeah, and it can be like choosing children, right? You don't want to do that. But I'm really excited. We're kicking off with Eric Church in the amphitheater, and that's going to be just a rockin' show. He always puts on a really, really amazing performance. And then you go all the way to the other side of the grounds on opening day, where Buddy Guy is playing his last tour. We've heard it is the last. So really, if you stem to stern every day, there's always going to be a great artist to see. But we'll do daily picks. How about that? Opening day, I'm going with Eric Church and Buddy Guy, but know that there's a lot of music available throughout the whole run. That's going to be great.
I told you this last year as well. If there's something you want to talk about your great festival, the greatest music festival on the planet, you're always welcome on my program, Sarah Pancari. Have a great run. I will see you out there on several occasions. Looking forward to it as well. And hopefully this great Wisconsin weather continues for your run at Summerfest.
All right, we'll see you and Kathy soon. Thanks.
All right, thank you. Sarah Pancari, president, I should say, of Milwaukee Summerfest. Let's take a quick break here. You're listening, of course, to WTMJ. Let's take a look at our show poll, which is up on the Twitter. On 620 WTMJ or at WTMJ Steve. I talked about it earlier. Simple question, one word answer. And I got a lot of great responses on the Old National Bank talk and text line as well. One word. Former President Donald Trump in Miami for a historic arraignment related to his... People get mad if I use the term mishandling. That's a news account. Don't get bent out of shape about that. Get bent out of shape about the conduct and or the former president's ability to get out of those significant charges, depending on what side of the aisle you're on. What is your one-word reaction to these charges? Finally is one of the answers I provided. 64% of you with 221 votes, so well done you. Infuriating, 11.8%. Disinterested. Don't want to hear it, don't want to listen to it, don't want to care about it, 20%. I think I could ask any question and there would always be 20% or 25% I would say disinterested. And comments, let's sample the comments quickly. Up north, Dan, just sick of all the political BS from all sides and all directions. Seems like every politician is dirty in some way, shape, or form. Unfortunately, that seems to be the case. Mark says, tempted fate one too many times. Stevie says, lock him up. Mike says, he should have been arrested a long time ago on espionage. He showed people top secret documents and probably the Saudis, the war plans on Iran. Corey says no one is above the law. So we got a little bit of time this half hour before Chef Michael Fecker joins us in studio in the 11 o'clock hour. Looking forward to that. On your thoughts about all of this, and you can give me the one word answer. You can call 855-616-1620 or text the Old National Bank Talks and text line. I've been pretty clear about this. I'm going to revisit it again because I want people to understand. I keep an open mind. The charges are significant. I don't believe the president can make a case that he was just hanging on to it because he, in some ways, that he only understands, he declassified these materials because that's a significant stretch. And I noted this morning. There's always going to be a robust group of people who just love and support Donald Trump. That's probably not going to change. But when I listened to some network coverage last night from arriving back into Washington, D.C., senators who had been off for the weekend, Republican senators, not Democrats, Republican senators, and almost to an individual, they said, these are serious charges. National Review, online. And I'll talk to this
to this with my guest, Christian Snyder, author and columnist, who has written for National Review and other publications and two books about what this all means for the former president. There seems to be, in my opinion, something different about this, something more deeply disturbing. The quantity was amazing. Now, whenever I talk about this, I get the questions. Well, what about Biden? What about Clinton? Whoever did anything illegal should be prosecuted. And I remind people on the Clinton question, one, she lost the election. She didn't win. She wasn't president. Two, Donald Trump, his appointees controlled these agencies. They couldn't charge and convict her when he controlled Congress and the appointments in those agencies. So other than this desire to see Hillary Clinton suffer beyond losing the election, which I'm guessing would be pretty significant considering she was the overwhelming favorite to win that race, what are you looking for? And if you have that, here's the part where the logic falls apart. If you want that for Hillary Clinton, if you want that for Joe Biden, is it insincere to not want that same treatment for the former President Donald Trump? That's where the logic falls apart. There's no answer to that. It is illogical to say somehow he's different. It is illogical to go with the what about, because he had the opportunity to pursue Clinton. He had the opportunity with his appointments and his control of Congress, and that didn't happen. That should suggest something to you. Mike joins us on the phone lines. Hey, Mike.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. What do you think?
Well, this is, when he lost the election and he was disputing it, for me, it took Bill Barr to say what he said before I, kind of said, you know what, there's probably no there. In this case, Bill Barr is saying that the charges are serious. And as we know, Bill Barr was, Trump's appointee.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think he has an axe to grind. And I just feel that this is serious because it has to do with national security, or potentially has to do with national security. That's not to take away from what Hillary Clinton did and potentially Joe Biden. I wish Hillary in particular would have been investigated more, because I think there was something there. But anything to do with national security has to be taken with the utmost seriousness. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Mike. And to that point, we don't know at this moment if any of these documents fell into the hands of people that shouldn't have access to them. We don't know if American lives overseas were put at risk because of these documents. Because information gained by access to these documents may not be utilized in the commission of crimes overseas against Americans for weeks, months, years from now. Let's put it this way. If there is that kind of connection, to quote, I don't know if it was Bill Barr or one of the other former Trump appointees, Trump is toast. Because that connection, besides being deadly, is the end of any political liability. And there's strong suggestion, by the way, for those folks who don't acknowledge this or want to forget about it or ignore it. There's strong indication that in some recent polling, not just the indictments, 37 counts, but the reaction from Republicans, including U.S. senators that are Republican, on the seriousness of the charges is impacting Trump's ability to be, eventually, if he's successful, the leading candidate for Republicans in the next presidential election. There seems to be some erosion there. And just to wrap it, the final piece of that is, of course, winning the Republican nomination is only one piece. Winning the election requires a lot more heavy lifting that, for the life of me, I cannot understand why Republicans would go down that road investing in this candidate in the degree that would be required to run him as the candidate in the next presidential election, knowing that he has no support among independents and has not even the support of all Republicans. That's dangerous, and in the case of the election, foolish. Quick break. We'll get back to some of the News from Miami. Trump will be arrested and arraigned in Miami courthouse, in a Miami courthouse later today. I think it's about 2 our time, 2 or 2.30, and that's if it's on time. And Christian Slater, author and columnist, will join us at 11.35 to kind of go over some of his thoughts on where all this goes. And to be fair, neither one of us are lovers of Donald Trump. I have said over again, I would not vote for him. I didn't vote for him. And I wrote in Nikki Haley. So judge me for those actions, however you choose to. But I also understand, and this is something that I think we have to recognize, at this moment is the leading candidate for the Republican nomination. And you can't discount that or pretend it's not real. It is real. And voters, for whatever reason, and I often say on my program, you can vote how you want. I don't read party talking points or direct you in your voting. I will tell you what I think about the candidates or the elected officials. That's my job. And I'm not a Trump supporter. But I also acknowledge, and to be brutally honest, I have friends, family, neighbors who love Donald Trump and will vote for him again if he's the nominee. And you have every right to do that. And that's the question that's going to be facing this country. And I think this afternoon's hearing and arraignment will go a little ways in kind of illuminating some of the specifics of how he conducted himself post-presidency. And those things are important, trust me. And we had a great question from Bob in Waukesha earlier. Why is this still a thing? Joe Biden documents, Mike Pence documents, Donald Trump certainly documents. Why is this a thing? Because the rules were in place. The protocols are in place. They chose to ignore them. So my answer as someone who likes action versus talk is you don't let them waltz these documents out of the White House until they're examined by the National Archives, until they're determined that they are classified. In that case, they don't go. Or they're declassified. Help yourself. This isn't brain surgery, folks. It's following protocols, using the same standards for every president, and not allowing presidents to do whatever they want. That's the issue. And we'll learn a little bit about that this afternoon. Chef Michael Fecker after the break in studio right here in WTMJ.
Breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
Welcome, 11 o'clock hour. I'm laughing because I love this segment so much. Last time he was here and joining me in studio, Chef Michael Fecker. Hello, sir.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Steve. Thank you for having me.
I got such a reaction, and I think I forwarded some of this stuff on to you. Like, how do we get a hold of him? How do we, you know, what's he got going? I was at one of your restaurants, Dobie's in St. Francis. Absolutely loved it on Saturday night.
Thank you. Thank you. I hope you really tasted the passion we put into the food.
Unbelievable.
And the service. Thank you.
Kind of, you know, it had a little bit of the old school supper club. You got the, you know, the relish tray.
Yes, yes, totally. You know, I left it the way it was when I took over, but I tried to help the system. I tried to help the process. I tried to help my team to make it even more enjoyable for my customers.
And I told you this in the break. My wife, Kathy, who's a tough critic when it comes to food, the best breaded mushrooms as an appetizer she's ever had in her life.
You know, I look at a plate and your experience as a movie. You have the main actor and then you have the supporting cast. That little mushroom may be just an appetizer. It's a breaded mushroom. But it makes so much difference when you have it unique and done correctly.
It was unbelievably good.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. Thank you.
She was dipping it in the sauce. I just ate them straight.
Right. The marinara sauce that I sent out.
Yeah,
thank
fantastic.
You.
Fantastic. So good. Thanks for that experience.
Absolutely.
All right, so there's a lot of things we're going to talk about, and you're like one of my regular featured guests now, contributors to the show, because I love food. You certainly love food as a chef, well-known chef El Mito. You got a new place in Delafield.
Yes, I have El Mito Cafe in Delafield. I have Zesty in Heartland.
Yes,
and we have Dobie's in St. Francis, and of course I'm all over the place. I try to be your caterer. I try to do weddings for you. Whatever is food. Look, Steve, I live to cook. I cook to live. So whatever allows me to live and cook, I'm in.
So let this get out of the way right away. So 855-616-1620, the old National Bank talk and text line. Questions for the chef. We will certainly feature those. I wanted to talk. We mentioned last time about grilling. It's that time of year. I'm going to be grilling out probably this weekend.
Correct.
Marinades. You were big talking about that last time. That was a big, and a lot of people asked about it. So let's get to it. So you're a big fan of marinating meat before it goes on the grill. Why is that?
Correct. I mean, marinades are mainly used to enhance flavors, change textures, and infuse your ingredient with a lot of flavors and creating layers. So marinades also have a lot to do with time. How long do you let your marinade sit? What do you use in it? So there are a couple of things that we use in marinades. We use seasoning, which is usually salt or sugar. We use spices and flavorings, which are various different spices. We like herbs and so on and so forth. We use acidity, which is tartaric acid, vinegar. We have citric acid from citrus fruits, or we have wine that is another tartaric acid. And we have enzymes. We forget sometimes about the enzymes. Enzymes are a part of things like yogurt, buttermilk, things that can break and do a lot of help to us by making the textures of the meat or the ingredients amazing.
So we're not all scientists. You've got some of that because you're a pretty well-accredited chef. But we don't have that experience.
Totally correct.
So some basic rules of thumb here when it comes to marinade, like how much is too much? How do we gauge the right mix of marinade versus the meat that we
Absolutely.
Have in the marinade?
Yeah. So the first thing that I want everybody to do is keep it simple to start the marinating process. Then they become a master at what they do. Remember, the journey from cook to chef doesn't only happen in a professional kitchen. It also happens at home because you are all home chefs. So just use an acid, whatever that choice is, lemon. Use salt and pepper and your favorite seasoning. Then the amount that you put on doesn't really have to do that much. It just has to make sure, you have to make sure that your ingredients is completely submerged under that marinade. So, chef, the next question is, but that's a lot of marinade if I'm going to put. You never put an ingredient into a pan when you want to marinate. You use a big Ziploc bag.
I was going to ask that, so there. It's a Ziploc bag.
Absolutely. It's perfect because then you fold the Ziploc before you close it so the air is pushed out. So you automatically creating an atmosphere that the marinade is pushed into the ingredient.
Let me go the opposite. Is there anything you shouldn't marinate?
No.
No?
No.
Nothing.
You can do vegetables, you can do meats, you can do any kind of protein and fruits. For me, for example, I marinate my Door County cherries in bourbon in my restaurants. So when you have those cherries that we usually muddle, that's a different kind of cherry. That's a maraschino cherry. The one that we put on for you to bite on and enjoy, that's the bourbon marinated cherry. Now, how do we do that? We use heat in that process, because if you let that cherry sit in marinade, it's going to dissolve. So what do? We heat the bourbon. We add all the seasoning in that bourbon. Now it's a hot liquid. You pour it on a cold ingredient, which is the cherries, and instantly is marinated.
You were talking about time. When you marinate something, does that lessen the time? Or does that have anything to do with the time spent cooking?
Great question. I love the process that I'm going to share with you because it cuts down on the time and it infuses the ingredient tremendously with flavor. Put everything that you have marinated in a small little Pyrex, nice and tight together. Put them in the oven at 350 the day before you're going to start grilling. As soon as you see some change of color on your meat, turn it off and let it sit in the oven until it cools down. Tomorrow you go to the grill. You're going to have layers of flavor that your mouth is going to sink. Like you don't even know where it came from. Why? Because the heat helped the ingredient to open the pores and helped the marinade to penetrate a lot faster and a lot deeper. Sometimes you marinate something, Steve, and you take a bite, and after the first bite, there is no flavor left. It's back to that first piece of meat that is just by itself. Why? Because it hasn't had a chance to penetrate.
Somebody asked a simple question. Hot dog. You marinate a hot dog?
Oh, okay. Who is he? I want to know him. Okay,
people,
you got me.
I tell you what, a good hot dog on a grill smells amazing. And whenever I do this at a party, I have other stuff. The hot dogs are like, oh, I want a hot dog. It smells amazing.
Yeah, I think a hot dog is one of those ingredients that is very difficult to marinate. Why? Because it is so dense. So to break the connecting fibers, a broth can be marinated,
yes,
but a hot dog is very difficult. But again, another trick that I'm going to tell my friend that just put me to shame, thank you so much, I'm going to tell my friend is heat your hot dogs in a little bit of liquid prior to taking them to the grill.
So they stay moist.
That's right. Yeah. And they're partially heated. So you don't have to worry about it heating all the way through. It's going to heat out a lot faster, so it's not going to burn on you.
What's your sausage of choice? I love bratwurst.
I love brats. I adore brats because there's so many various flavors in it.
Right.
I like a good Italian sausage. To be honest with you, it doesn't matter where, what sausage, whatever I want to travel through the magic of food, that's my sausage of choice.
Questions are coming in, as I expected. What is the temperature and length of time that you should cook a full rack of pork ribs?
Okay, great. A rack of pork ribs, you know, you usually don't want to marinate because it's so large and you don't do that. I would do the following. I would measure the weight of the pork, put it in the oven at 500 degrees for about 20 minutes, and then remove it, and then put it on the grill and cook it 15 minutes per pound.
Okay.
This is a bulletproof recipe that I'm sharing with you. Yeah, 15 minutes per pound.
Another one from the 414. Chef, does marinating work when you freeze the item or just when it's unthawed before cooking?
Absolutely. It does not work once it's frozen, but it does work prior. And once you freeze it, actually, you have created a layer over the ingredients so it doesn't get freezer burn due to the help of the marinade.
From the 920, this is always controversial. Do you grill the, you answered this last time, but I'll ask it again. Do you grill the bratwurst first and then put it in a beer bath, or do you boil them first and then sear on the grill?
I boil first, I sear on the grill. Yeah, that's a much better way, in my opinion. But imagine, I know what our listener is asking that question, because what about if you have a lot of people coming over and you need to keep it moist? Then I would do the other way around. But still, I would use that same bath that I'm creating to warm them up, grill them, and put them back in that same bath. And make sure that bath is seasoned. It has salt, and it has some spices, a bay leaf, maybe a beer in there. So again, you don't take the flavor away from your brats.
This one's from me.
You got it.
Best sides when you're cooking sausages. Best sides. Like, something that's easy to make for people. And then a potato salad, a macaroni. What's the best side?
Okay. Remember, sausages are well seasoned and have to have a lot of seasoning in them already and some fat content. So you need something to wash them off. I love a coleslaw without mayonnaise, but with vinegar, so that the acidity from the tartaric acid cleanses your palate and gets you ready for the next one. Add a little bit of arugula, something with a little bit of natural spice in your coleslaw. Remember, a coleslaw is just a vehicle. You use cabbage all the time, but nobody says you can add anything else to it. Now, usually we see for color, they add a little bit of carrot here and there, you know, but add whatever you like.
As somebody who grows cabbage in my big garden, fresh cabbage,
oh,
absolutely amazing.
It's ridiculous. And it's so good for you, Steve.
Yes.
It is so good. It's one of the anti-inflammatories that the world really knows about, but we don't use it as much. Do you know that there's a story that in the Roman times, the gladiators used to wrap their knees and their joints with mushed up cabbage to reduce inflammation? I'm serious. I mean, it's amazing for you. So use it, everybody. Please do.
All right. So if I'm walking around with cabbage kneecaps, then I'm trying to make myself
feel. Oh, boy. You gladiated, you, Steve.
My guest, Chef Michael Fecker. Connie, we'll go to break with this one. Connie from Manitowoc. This chef is great. Will this be on your podcast? The answer is yes. Not only in the entire program podcast, we'll separate it out so people can find us. After the break, how people can get a hold of you, and we're entertaining your questions on the Old National Bank Talk and Text Line, 855-616-1620. Grilling, marinating. The magic of summer in Wisconsin.
And loving life through the magic of food. That's what we're here for.
You heard it. He said, I can't say any better than that. WTMJ is what you're listening to. Always a popular guest, Chef Michael Fecker, joining us in studio with his great suggestions and wisdom on the art of cooking, and from a very qualified chef.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Who runs a
Thanks
lot
Thanks for having me.
Let's run through the restaurants real quick.
Zesty in Heartland, Il Mito Delafield in Delafield, Il Mito Wauwatosa in Tosa, and Dobie's Steakhouse and the Supper Club in St. Francis.
Yeah, and I just had Dobie's great experience if you want to check that out. Good morning, chef. This is from Andy in Burlington. Does the quality of the wine or beer affect the flavor of the food when marinating?
What a great question. Remember, marinades are used to enhance flavors. So if you do not use the right liquid with the quality of liquid, they're not going to enhance flavors. They can. My answer is absolutely it does. You do not need to spend tons of money on a $30 bottle of wine.
There's great $10 bottle of wine.
Steve, they're great $6 bottles of wine. As long as it's sippable, my friends. That means once you take a sip, you're not going to go, oh my God, what is this? That flavor penetrates into your food. So make sure it is enjoyable, or at least is sippable.
This one is another common question. The magic of a moist and medium cooked hamburger on a gas grill. My husband always dries them out.
Yes. Three three-zone cooking. Three-zone cooking means you have one side of your grill very hot. You have the center medium, and then you have the other side completely off. So you start on the hot side, 1 minute per side. You go to the medium, 1 minute per side. You set it aside in the cold, and you let it sit while you're doing everything else. Then your steak, your burger or your steak is going to be cooked to perfection. That is why, because your oven, remember, my friends, your oven is a broiler that is upside down and with the lid is an oven. So once you put that lid down, the heat starts rotating, but it's not direct heat.
I got a couple of these. What is your favorite corn on the cob process?
Then I'm going to ask you this question and you answer it for me. I'm going to give you both suggestions. If you're going to do it on the grill, then leave the skin on.
Yes.
Do not take it
off.
Don't
shuck it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Don't shuck it. So that way the moisture has nowhere to escape and it stays inside and it doesn't char your grill, your corn. Otherwise, I personally always cook it in a water bath of various seasoning and flavors so that corn has absorbed those flavors. Then I go on the grill for about a minute per rotation. So move your corn in circles and rotation and I just grill it 1 minute per side and that's it.
And grilled corn on the cob is amazing.
Oh, my God. The layers and the sugar content.
Yeah.
The fructose content of corn just creates this Maillard reaction, which is that browning of the natural sugars and protein.
Chef Michael Fecker joining us in studio. How about this? Jeff from Florida has a grilling question for Chef Fecker. Hi,
yes.
Jeff.
Yes. Hi, Jeff.
What's your question?
Hi there. Chef, actually, I listened to you last time you were on. I think it was right before the last holiday. And used your suggestion. I was grilling some, I think it was Polish sausage, and the night before I sauteed them in a stock, a chicken stock. And, you know, I par cooked them, you know, where you boil them in the chicken stock and then, you know, slowly simmered them. And this, I let them soak. I don't know if I was supposed to, but I let them soak in that. Of course, you know, with off the flame, put it in the refrigerator, let them soak in that overnight. Now, I don't know if I'll let you speak in a second. I don't know if I did the technique wrong, but that's what I did. I know you said season the stock. I was afraid to put salt into the stock because I thought the stock was already salted. You know, I didn't want to end up with, you know, overly salty sausage. So problem was, I loved the way it grilled. It was beautiful. I only had to have the sausage on the grill for like maybe, as you said, as you promised, 3 or 4 minutes. It was wonderful. It was the best grilling experience I've had in decades. I've always ended up hating to grill because it was always such a chore.
There must be a butt in here, I'm guessing. Spend,
but yeah.
The butt is the sausage itself was rather bland. Yeah. I think the sauté, you know, the marinade took the flavor of the sausage.
It
somehow pulled the flavor of the sausage out, which you kind of warned about. You touched on that. What should I have added to the marinade in, you know, which, or, you know, the stock
yes.
that I, you
yep.
know, par
We got you. We got you, Jeff.
Yes,
Let's listen to what the chef
Good
has
morning,
to say.
Jeff. First of all, thank you for listening, and I'm going to walk you quickly through. Did you take the skin off?
I already hung up on him, but answer the
okay.
question.
Yeah, Jeff. Did you take the skin off? And if you did, then all of those flavors leached out into the stock. But no matter what you do, you have to season your stock with salt because it doesn't matter if the stock has a little bit of sodium or salt in it. It's not going to be sufficient. And whatever flavor that you love and you know is in Polish sausage, add it to that liquid so that flavor can never leach out. So as long as you got the technique down, my friend, I am not only proud of you, I'm proud of being a friend and you listening to me. So you got it. You just got it. Now, make sure you repeat that process again. Because if you don't, that means you just went to school, spent all this money, and you didn't learn anything.
And, you know, part of it is it's trial and error. You figure out what works best for you, what tastes best for you.
One of the questions that was asked to me when I was on a Food Network show was, Chef, what is the biggest mistake that people make at home? I said they do not repeat their mistakes. They do something, they make a risotto, for example, and it's mushy. I'm not going to touch risotto anymore. No. This is the learning process.
Right.
Take that mushy risotto, turn it into cakes, and make risotto cake, and make another risotto the next time you want to do it. You know, that kind of things. Anyway, I'm here. I'm your personal chef. Any questions, I would love to answer.
All right. Here's one on the best way. This is tricky. The best way to smoke meats without a smoker.
Absolutely. Remember, smoking, we do not want to go over 212 degrees, which is the boiling point of liquid. So if you're going to smoke and you have a grill, all you need to do is, I'm going to tell you a quick trick here. Liquid smoke, natural liquid smoke. Rub it on your ingredients, put them on the grill, and that would be a natural, basically a smoking process.
So an easier way to do it.
Easier way to do it without a smoker. Or you just add a little bit of charcoal or wood chips on your grill in a small little stainless tin can and burn it, start the smoking process, and close the lid. And the smoking is going to happen.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Before you get out of here, and this half hour went too quickly, but you'll be back. Best way for people to get a hold of you, because I spent a lot of time answering questions,
yes,
or forwarding questions. The best way to get a hold of you is?
Yes, absolutely. First of all, I'm going to post the Bloody Mary marinated flank steak for grilling on my website. So it's going to be chefvicker.com, and post any questions you have on chefvicker.com, or find me. Just follow your nose, for God's sakes. Follow your nose and you will find me all over the place.
And Fekker is F-E-K-E-R.
F-E-K-E-R, yes.
No, don't put an extra C in there.
No, please don't.
No. Then it's too close to another word. We don't want that.
That's right. I was just going to say, don't use a U either, for God's sakes.
Always amazing to talk to you. I'm actually going to your El Mito restaurant in Tulsa on Friday because I love your food so much.
Wonderful. Looking forward to having you, and love you, everybody. Thank you for listening.
All right. What was it one more time, the website?
Chef, www.chefvicker.com.
Easy.
The one, the only, the myth, the legend, right here.
Always a pleasure, my friend.
Love you guys. Thank you.
We'll take a break. We'll get to the news in a bit. All right, if I hear that music, that means my next guest, author, columnist, creator of Zero Star Reviews, writer of Anti-Knowledge, his latest book, available where you buy books, joins us on the phone. Christian Snyder, welcome, sir.
Welcome. I'm so happy I have my own walk-up music.
Yes, well, I think you picked it, but... regardless, a while ago. But yes, you have your own walk-up music. All right, so obviously the big story today, the arraignment this afternoon. I think it's about 2 o'clock or 2:30 our time here. Give me, you know, I've heard a million smart takes, hot takes, all of that stuff. But from your perspective, from a 2023 40,000-foot view from an airliner, what does today mean both for Donald Trump and for the country?
Oh, boy. Well, see, I thought the big news of the day was that Taylor Swift's ex-boyfriend is coming to Milwaukee to play a show.
Is that true?
Yes, that was just on the WTMJ news during the break. There were actually some ding-dongs that were telling Taylor Swift while she was dating this guy that she shouldn't actually date him because he's, I don't know.
All right, since you deviated from what I wanted to talk about and you interjected with Taylor Swift, who's hot.
We'll get back to Trump if you want.
Yeah, we'll get back to it. But on the Taylor Swift thing, I've had some fun with her. I give her credit because she's monetized her situation as good as you can do it. Talent speaking, where do you put her in the list? Where is she at?
Oh, she's no doubt talented. Mm-hmm. But we've undergone like a mass psychosis as a nation. I mean, I think at some point she had 10 of the top 10 songs in America at one point. I don't think her fame matches necessarily the level of her talent, but the fact that the music industry is just so fractured at this point because of streaming and, you know, nobody buys albums anymore. So everybody's kind of off in their own corner, listening to whatever they want. And she seems to be the one that's broken through that everybody seems to listen to, so good for her. She's obviously a very, very good businesswoman.
Yeah, and as far as concerts go, it's like Springsteen or Taylor Swift dominating all the news and all the conversations. So well done her, and she's, you know, I don't know, how old is Taylor Swift, 30?
Oh, she's got to be probably 32, 33,
okay,
I don't know.
So fairly young, she's established a tremendous record already, to use a weird music analogy, but also the fact that she's so successful at a young age, I mean, the sky's the limit for her.
And people of all ages like her, too. I mean, all from little girls to adults. I mean, she played Chicago a couple of weeks ago, and my Facebook feed was full of, you know, women my age who were pretending to take their daughters, but were actually there to see them herself, to see her themselves.
Well, that's what you're charging them with. They're pretending. It wasn't just a mother-daughter experience. They wanted to see Taylor Swift.
there were probably a lot of women in their 40s borrowing children from other people just as an excuse.
All right. This provides a perfect segue. Speaking of entertainers, Donald Trump will be arraigned this afternoon in a courthouse in Miami. What does this all mean from your perspective?
Well, what the trial does and what these charges do is essentially turn this into a courtroom drama when, in fact, I think it's a lot more than that. So what the charges do is they allow Republicans, they allow Trump to say, you know, Biden's DOJ is after me. They should have gone after Hillary Clinton. They should be going after Hunter Biden and all this kind of stuff. Let's say, hypothetically, forget everything that's happened to Donald Trump legally. Let's forget the impeachments. Let's forget the indictments. Let's forget all that stuff. And just listen to the words that Donald Trump has said over the years. And you tell me if that's somebody that should be president or that's like a decent human being. The answer is no. But what the indictment does is it allows Republicans, it allows Trump to go after the process itself. So they can say, you know, the DOJ is after me, or the evidence just isn't there. You know, one strategy that Republicans have had is to say that Trump is being charged with worse stuff than he's actually being charged with. Mm-hmm. Like Lindsey Graham goes on TV and he says, look, he's not guilty of espionage, or, you know, Hugh Hewitt, who's a national TV or a radio guy, goes on Twitter and says, well, there's no evidence Trump actually showed this information to a foreign power or anything. So, well, yeah, no, but that just because he might be innocent of those things doesn't mean he's not guilty of this other stuff. And, you know, you're innocent until proven guilty. But a lot of the stuff that he's being charged with is being backed up by Trump's own words. I mean, there's recordings of him, you know, waving around this piece of paper that is allegedly, you know, some kind of war plan. So
it's one thing to do it, but then to deny that you did it, even though when you're on record or tape admitting that you did it, that's a unique way to defend yourself.
Right. In order to show that Donald Trump is not fit for the presidency, you don't need to use any of the indictments. You don't need to use any of the stuff that has happened to him. You just need to use the words that he's used over the years. That should be enough to keep him from the presidency. But now he gets to argue essentially the facts of the case and, you know, the unfairness of the DOJ and all that kind of stuff, you know, which, like I said, turns it into a courtroom drama when, you know, it's the behavior that he's shown over the years that makes him unfit. Not necessarily, you know, the criminal charges or whatever.
I had a great caller today, Bob from Waukesha, earlier in the program, asking about this. And this is right to the issue. We have protocols and rules in place for documents. The National Archives has protocols. The White House has protocols. The Office of Presidency and the FBI, DOJ, all of that. But yet we've seen documents, massive amounts of documents removed from the White House by the president, former President Donald Trump. We've had stories in cases where Mike Pence, former vice president, he's had documents. Joe Biden, I imagine if you looked at any other the former office holders at that level, they've all had documents. What is the issue here? Do we not have protocols? Is there a missing piece here? What's actually going on? Because if we have these documents that are so easily removed from the White House, it's not that far-fetched to think they would fall into the wrong hands, given all the things that happen in this world every day.
Right, and there's also a case to be made, and it's made by a lot of people kind of in the libertarian space that a lot of things are overclassified, that, you know, there are things that are classified at the time that then, you know, like the president's location somewhere, but then the event passes and it's never declassified, and so it shouldn't be classified anymore. That's fine. The difference here, of course, is that, you know, with Mike Pence and Joe Biden and all these other people, that they found the documents. They were like, oops, we had the documents. You know, Joe Biden had them behind the Trans Am in the driveway or whatever it was, and they turned them right over. Whereas Trump, they gave him the opportunity to do so. He said he gave him everything that he had. They then had to subpoena him to get the extra documents. And then he allegedly you know, talked with his lawyers about either destroying documents or taking them out or mm-hmm. hiding them or whatever.
Moving them.
And that's the difference here. That's where the, you know, the relevant statute kicks in. And I mean, everybody's saying, you know, how airtight of an indictment this is. I wouldn't be so sure. I mean, I've seen indictments before that looked pretty airtight and they wiggle out of them. So, you know, Trump hasn't been held responsible for anything he's done in 76 years of his life. He's pretty much unbeaten in that regard. So,
yeah, you know, never underestimate Donald Trump. Christian Seider, I guess, author and columnist and guest on this program a couple Tuesdays every month. We'll take a break. We'll continue the conversation after this on WTMJ. Author, columnist Christian Seider joining us on WTMJ on this Tuesday. A couple questions for you from the text line, Old National Bank Talking text line. Does Christian have a website or somewhere someone can go to read more of what he writes? Sounds like a very intelligent guy. Where would they go for that?
Boy, well, you can follow me on Twitter, which is at Schneider, S-C-H-N-E-I-D-E-R _ CM. So that's Schneider CM.
And that links to everything you write, basically.
Right. You can go to antiknowledge.com. There's a slash in between anti and knowledge. Just if you know how to use Google, you can find me.
Yeah. And you're all over the place. National Review. What was your most recent piece?
My most recent piece was actually about Milwaukee and vaping, the new vaping regulations that the city of Milwaukee has put in.
All right, so let's run through that, because I know you wrote about it, so you must be very passionate about it.
Well, it seems like, so Milwaukee, just the planning commission or whatever it is, just put in the new regulation that says vaping shops can't be anywhere, you know, within 1,000 feet of schools, daycares, any of these other places.
Mm-hmm.
And I think these regulations are overkill. They're being pushed by a lot of anti-tobacco groups, which is interesting to me because vapes contain actually no tobacco. They're actually relatively safe. They're, you know, the problem with cigarettes is that they have tar and, you know, smoke, and, you know, they give you black lung and cancer and those type of things. None of that stuff happens with vapes because it's essentially water vapor that it brings nicotine to you. And nicotine is the one thing that they have in common, but it's actually kind of a relatively harmless drug. It's you know, researchers in the UK think it's pretty much like caffeine, but it looks like smoking. And so these anti-tobacco groups want to keep people from doing it. Simply because it looks like smoking, and it's overkill, and it's been shown to actually help people stop smoking. And if we had our choice, we would rather people be vaping than smoking.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of disagreement on this issue, and I've heard people argue on both sides of it. I think the school thing is interesting because I think they're just trying to keep smoking of any sort, vaping of any sort, away from schools. What the distance should be, I have no idea. I mean, we've seen a lot of these stores open up in the last couple of years.
Well, in places like San Francisco, which have just nixed vaping altogether, what they've seen is high school students actually go back to tobacco. So when there's less vaping, there's more tobacco use. When there's more vaping, there's less tobacco use. So they're essentially pushing kids into the arms of big tobacco by getting rid of the vaping, which is, you know, if they're going to do anything, we'd rather have them vape.
All right. Texter says, do you vape? Is that while you're defending it, or
I do not vape. I would classify myself as anti-tobacco. I've never had a cigarette in my life.
Really?
But yeah. But if we had our choice, and if it helps people stop smoking, I say we go with vapes.
Fair point. Now the other question that I was referring to is a Trump question. Will any of this, whether it's this, whether it's the Georgia investigation, January 6th investigation, ongoing as well, whatever happens in Manhattan as early as March of next year, primary season, will any of this change the face of Republican politics where Donald Trump is not the nominee for president?
Well, that's a big question. I think you're starting to see people like Chris Christie get into the race, and I don't know if you saw any of his CNN town hall.
Yeah, I played some of it earlier on the show.
he went after him pretty hard, which is, look, I have my problems with Chris Christie because he laid down like a dog to Trump. He says he's, you know, this tough guy that you'll get what he really thinks. And, you know, he just gave himself over to Trump, and it was embarrassing for him. But would I rather have somebody like that in the race attacking Trump? Yeah, I think that'd be good. I don't think he's ever going to get elected to anything, but I think he could serve a real purpose in the Republican primary by knocking Trump down so that a more electable candidate, somebody like Tim Scott or Nikki Haley or whoever, kind of has permission to go after some of this stuff on Trump. Right now, they won't even say Trump's name because they're afraid of what he's going to do to him. So if Chris Christie can make it acceptable to attack Trump, then I think that'll open it up to the field, and maybe they have a chance.
Yeah, I applauded him for doing that. The other change that I noticed, a marked difference, was when they spoke to Republican U.S. senators coming back to Washington, D.C. after the weekend, many of them framed Trump's arraignment in with the word serious. I'm not getting that same reaction from Republicans in the House. So I think there's a difference between the two bodies, and I think that is encouraging that we're at least seeing Republicans, albeit still a smaller number than I'd like to see, say that this is serious business and should be approached that way.
Right, and I think you're seeing a lot of Republicans that came right out of the gate before even seeing any of the indictment charges say, you know, this is a witch hunt, they're weaponized DOJ and all that kind of stuff. And now some of them are starting to back off that a little bit. Like Nikki Haley yesterday said, you know, these are very serious charges, and she's starting to pull away from her initial statement. So I think as more of the facts become known, I think maybe you'll start to see some of those people who jumped out of the gate to defend Trump right away maybe start to pull back a little bit.
We shall see. Christian Slater, author, columnist, always great to talk to you. We'll do it again down the road.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Christian Slater, our guest on WTMJ. We'll see what Jeff's going to talk about after this.